I see how my path and the decisions that I made and that my parents helped me to make, especially in my young life, all of it's contributed to this, and I'm so thrilled with it, you know?
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to the show, Story and Craft. I'm Mark Preston. If this is your first time here, welcome. Thanks so much for taking part of your day to check in and check out the show. And of course, if you've been here before, thank you so much for coming back by. I certainly appreciate it. Today, we are chatting with a gentleman named Nathan Kress. Now, for many people, they know him most notably as Freddy on the Nickelodeon show iCarly. He is a really intriguing guy. It's really interesting to sit down and chat with someone who grew up as a child actor, and now, at 30 years old, he's doing other roles. But yet, he's coming back to do iCarly again. The reboot is currently on Paramount Plus. You can check it out right there. Of course, very nice chat. Really enjoyed the opportunity to spend time with Nathan. As always, if you don't mind, of course, like the show if you would. Subscribe. That way you get notified every time there's a new episode. Leave a review, whatever you feel like doing. But definitely want you to come back by. So do the subscribe thing. Do you smash the bell button? I don't know. We're on YouTube as well. So you smash something, you press buttons, but basically you're just coming back by every time there's a new episode. That's all. Okay, so let's get after it. Today is Nathan Kress Day, right here on Story and Craft. So how have you been doing today? You're in the LA area, correct?
Yes, I am. Yeah, we just finished, Jerry and I, one of my castmates, we just finished a satellite media tour. So we were doing, starting on the East Coast morning local news shows and then working our way to the West Coast. So we've been up pretty early. So I'm very warmed up for interviews. So this times out perfectly. I've gotten all my willies out and I've said my stupid answers already, I think.
I greatly admire folks that could stay as fresh for the last interview as they did for the first. So, you know, that's wonderful.
It's a lot easier when I'm doing it with Jerry though, too. Cause I think we, at this point, we've just known each other for so long that we know how to work off of like, oh, Jerry's about to start doing a bit. Here's how I'm going to lean into that, you know. So I think we make a pretty good team when it comes to this press stuff after years of practice.
Obviously, I'm a little young for iCarly. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a little old for iCarly.
You're not quite the demographic. You're one of those real fresh Gen Zers, I can tell.
I'll go with that. But my my kids were a little on the young side to dial in, and they didn't watch it as much because we're just – like kids a couple of years older would be watching it. And so it was funny. Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine's daughter last night. Her name is Kayla. I have to give her a producer credit because I said I stopped speaking with you. She's like, oh my God, I loved him on iCarly. And aww. But the funny thing, she was only, I think, 8 years old. And it was funny. I said, well, what was it at eight that you liked? She said, that's the way I viewed, or I thought, teenage life would be. It was sort of like her window to teenage life as an eight-year-old, you know. So, but yeah, she has much, much love for you and is all kinds of giddy. So she's looking forward to hearing this episode. I spoke with somebody the other day who was pretty well known back in the 80s. Now they're doing something. So she was known as like a teen actor, but here she is in her 50s. I've always been curious about that transition. When is that line of demarcation where you're not known as a kid actor anymore and you're, you know, or is that a kind of a sliding line depending on the project? Or did you become cognizant of that?
Yeah, like you said, it's a sliding scale and it probably depends on the projects that you take on. I feel like if you linger in kid world, you know, especially past whatever the initial show was that made you, you know, that set you off and was your platform, I could see how you could feel a little bit cornered into that market for a little bit longer. But it's just probably the first time you have a project where you say a bad word, you know, or you're in, you know, a more adult situation, I guess, you transition from the Nickelodeon to the MTV, you know.
Right, right.
But for me, it's always hard because I have such a baby face. It's really been tough for me to play my own age.
Well, how old are you now, by the way?
I'm 30. I just
turned 30. Man, give me some of your genetic material, man. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm thinking of what I looked like when I was 30, you know?
Well, to be fair, this is a team of professionals. What you don't see is what happens when my 5-year-old and my 2-year-old occur on this face, and how everything starts to sag and wear out and get puffy and, you know, exhausted. So, I got a lot of people backing me up, and they were there at 4 o'clock this morning before that media tour. I can guarantee you that. But I think for me, it has been a particular challenge just because I'm only maybe just starting to grow into my own face if I have some facial hair. And so a lot of the roles that I covet in the adult world are, I'm only just now starting to approach the threshold of being able to pull them off and have the audience believe it. And that was kind of nice, you know, with this new iCarly as an adult show, we're supposed to be just about our ages, like late 20s, early 30s. So, you know, whether or not the world is willing to accept it, I have a television show that's telling people that I can play a role this age.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. You were in the movie Into the Storm. And just coincidentally, I spoke with Matt Walsh last week.
No kidding.
And the name of the movie escaped me. I said, you're in that tornado. He's like, yeah. He said, yeah, it's one of the top 3 tornado movies. You know, he's being funny. But I did see that with my kids, I think last year sometime.
Really?
But as far as your kids, kind of going back to that real quick, you said you got a 5- and a 2-year-old?
Yes. Rosie and Evie, they're awesome. And actually, my wife, I met on Into the Storm. She was on the stunt team. And we met in the last few weeks of production. And if you look really, really close in the climax of it, where we're down in that storm drain and the big tornado is coming and going like right over us, we were positioned together by the director. So we spent 3 weeks in a hole soaking wet with 100-mile-an-hour winds blowing past us, just in absolute misery. That's a bonding experience.
Apparently. I was about to say that's something that kind of forges a bond that you can't really get in any other way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a group of probably 20 of us, a mix of actors and stunt people. And, we all got pretty close, after a shared traumatic experience like that. I didn't at the time, nothing really, cause I was dating somebody else at the time. So she was just a coworker who, you know, I got along with, but she got along with everybody else too. And, so we met on that, but we didn't really reconnect and become good friends until 2 years later. Because we filmed that in Michigan. She moved out to LA shortly after that movie was done and was working in the stunt world.
Mm-hmm. So is she still doing that now?
No, after we got married and had kids, we kind of thought maybe stunts is not the best field. You know, it's hard to be a mom with like a broken neck, you know? And, you know, she didn't really do anything too intense, but even the stuff that she did, she was getting pretty banged up, you know, and she'd come home and I'd say she had like a big goose egg on her forehead and bruises everywhere and stuff. So she was getting pretty beat up, and she really liked doing it, but she didn't really feel that it was a career calling. And I feel like you really have to feel like stunt work is a calling to want to commit to what toll that takes on your body, you know.
I would assume so. I would assume that you really, you know, for you to commit to doing it and doing it right and being safe, it's you really got to be into it. I think it takes a certain personality type, but but the little ones, you talk about broken neck. I know, depending on, you know, when you have little ones, the younger they are, the more stuff you have to carry. You know, when they get older, they don't have to have so much stuff. You know,
Or you make them carry it themselves.
Your 5-year-olds, I guess they're getting to that age now. But you talk about the car seats and all that. And traveling is so dynamic.
Yeah.
My kids are 20, 18, and 17. And my youngest just graduated from high school. So it's a little weird because they were that age 2 seconds ago for me. You know. So you have 2 girls, right?
Yeah. 2 girls. I keep hearing you've said the same thing that everybody else says. Like, just, you know, don't blink because it's going to be over. But we're very much in the days are long, but the years are short. And boy, the days are long right now. You know, it's so worth it. And I don't want to seem flippant and to take that for granted. It's just it's because right now, especially in those first 5 years, we're just trying to put a lot of intentionality and effort into being present for them and teaching them and giving them a good foundation right now to kickstart them off.
I was just about to say that word. I said, be present. I mean, I was a single father when they were very young, you know, so they're all three in diapers at the same time. And I think you can sympathize with that, you know, because diaper age does change the dynamic of how you move through life, how you travel, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, God, you know, one of them was crying, and I can look back on this, and this kind of sucks in the moment, but I know I'm going to look back fondly. It's one thing I know I got right. I said, 10 years from now, I'm going to want one of these moments back. And I was right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we learned a lot, just like everybody else. It's so stereotypical how much you learn between the first and the second kid. And with the first one, how personally you take everything and how you just nitpick yourself and you micromanage everything and you just try to nail down every aspect of your life. And then once the second one shows up, you just kind of throw it all to the wind and whatever happens, happens. And I think I used to be so stressed with the first one. Granted, she had just kind of she was a tough baby. She had a lot of colicky and reflux and just a lot of challenges that made the baby phase really hard and sleep deprived.
Did you have to use that, I think it's called Nutramigen, that special formula? It's kind of pre-digested proteins or something. It smells, when the babies drink it and they burp, it smells god awful. It's easier on their stomach. I remember my daughter was on that. She had the same thing. I was like, oh, I cannot wait till we get her off this formula because the smell was just terrible.
Yeah, formula. I don't know what they put in formula, but it is gnarly. And we only did formula with our second one. The first one, she was able to breastfeed all the way through, but still had all that reflux stuff because she had, like, you know, in vitro, she was pretty underdeveloped and her abdomen was very small and she had to be induced because she just wasn't growing the right way. So we're assuming it all just kind of came from, and she just grew out of it eventually. But man, the first part of it was so hard, like the first several months. But now it's gotten to the point where my wife and I think we're getting better at, when madness and chaos is happening around us, laughing, which I don't know if that's good or not, but there's a certain point when everything gets so insane that you can actually have a decent laugh about it. Just how ridiculous it all is. And, you know, laugh instead of cry, I guess, because otherwise it would just be too overwhelming. But yeah, I think we've just gotten to the point where we just don't take it so seriously. We don't take ourselves so seriously.
Yeah, once they start elementary school, it kind of dials the storm, kind of calms a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. But at least you've got both y'all both kind of, you know, it's a team effort. You know, that's always good to hear, right? You know, so that makes life for both y'all a lot easier, you know. Are y'all living, do you have family out in California as well?
Yeah, my side of the family is basically all in California. So my parents are, you know, an hour away, close enough to come by if something crazy is happening, you know, and we need them in a pinch. And then my wife's dad flies for an airline. So they fly, you know, on standby for free all the time. So they're able to just come out, stay as long as they want. He can make LA his home base temporarily so he can keep working while they're here. And it's an amazing situation.
Where's your family from originally?
Michigan.
Michigan. Okay.
So that's where we're starting with the storm. That's where they're all from. And they're still based out of. She's the oldest of four sisters. And all of the sisters are in different states right now. Mm. And then they go from Michigan and just fly around to wherever any of the siblings are. So we're the only ones with kids right now. So we get to monopolize a little bit of the grandparent support, which is awesome. we great family support, great neighbors, friends. We're very, very lucky. We're definitely not on an island. That's for sure.
What were your days like when you were filming iCarly
as a kid on the original or now?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Like right now, the recent episodes, because your production schedule when you're doing TV, that's a big chunk of your day. And when you come home, you're wanting to decompress, but you're coming home, you're right in it again. You know, so was it taxing at all having small children at home while you're filming a show?
Yes, it is. It juggling the desire to want to disengage and, you know, like I said, be fully present with them and not distracted in the midst of a production cycle is a constant struggle. And especially when they're young, a lot of the time they were going to bed before I even got home. But I will say the massive ups, I'm so grateful that right now my career has me at a place where I'm doing a multicam sitcom, because if you know production schedules at all, it is the best, most relaxed, most consistent, and most normal work schedule of any television project or movie, for that matter, that you could ever do, because you're only rehearsing 2 to 3 days a week and then shooting the other 2 or 3 days. So rehearsals are maybe 8 hours long. So I have kind of a typical 9 to 5, and then my last 2 days of the week are longer.
Now, how many episodes did y'all shoot?
We did 13 in the first season, and then right after that, I think Paramount made the call that all of their shows were going to be capped at 10 episodes per season. So
really?
Now we're in that
model. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Some shows have bumped down to 8, and I think my son and I just got done watching a series that it was even just 6 episodes. That wasn't really satisfying enough.
Yeah, it's a difficult casualty from the streaming service model. You used to, even for multicam sitcoms, you had, you know, a 22, 26 episode run, and you got to really flesh out the stories and do different stuff with the characters and have longer arcs. And we've had to really truncate these characters and do things a little bit faster than maybe we would have wanted to. And, you know, you really hit your groove at around episode 9 or 10. And it stinks that that's now right when the season ends.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a bummer. But fortunately, we had the benefit of an entire show's worth of lore and character development to build off of something. And it already existed. So we didn't have to start completely fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had something going for us where we could sort of hit the ground running, maybe more than a brand new show with totally new IP.
Well, that brings up the question of here you are doing a show with folks you have acted with before, you know. Was there a shorthand? Was there an ease? Could you ease back into it? Or was everybody's life in the year 2023, you know, was their life so different? Was it kind of like meeting them for the first time again, or working with them for the first time again in a way?
I was a little nervous about that at the beginning. I wasn't sure if it would be like riding a bike, or if it was going to be very awkward and clunky. And then it was, you know, what is the expectation? Is the network going to be disappointed in us if it's not the same kind of snappy chemistry and magic that there was before? But luckily, I mean, other than the kind of understandable freshman jitters of figuring out, you know, are we taking our characters in the right direction? I think the nerves were more on the individual. Of, you know, are we doing the right thing? Are we doing our characters justice? Is it enough like how it used to be, but is it also new enough at the same time? Finding that balance. That was the part that was more nerve-wracking. But once we all got in the same room, by the end of the first day, it just felt exactly like how it felt. It was like putting on a cozy blanket. You know, it's a safe place for me, honestly. It's just a place with people that I know and love, who we all care so much about the show and are so collaborative in the process. Miranda is an executive producer and holds a ton of creative control, and but she doesn't hold that over anyone. It's very much a team effort, and we have a lot of conversations about the best ways forward, and everybody's opinion is welcome. Our writers are so collaborative and welcoming to that, and we're so thankful for that, because a lot of shows are not that way, you know. But I think they have some trust in us being the voices of those characters for so long, and knowing what.
Well, that's the beauty of TV, you know, especially with series, you're rotating directors regularly, you know, really take ownership of the character after a while. And I think
it's all new director. Basically, the only people who came over, even on the creative side, were Miranda, Jerry, and I.
Really?
Everybody, the showrunner, the writers, everybody is brand new. So that is where I think they relied on us a little bit and trusted us to sort of steer the ship, at least for ourselves individually and then together as a whole, when we would put our heads together and collaborate on, you know, does this feel like iCarly or not, you know? So we're, again, just I'm so, so grateful for our writing team just being willing to have that conversation, you know, because we're in a very unique spot where no other show has really done this, where it's a honest-to-goodness kids show. Mm-hmm. That transitioned to an adult show with a lot of the same characters, and not just, oh, we're rebooting it and they're old now, but it's about the kids. It's the next generation, you know. That I feel like is the traditional model, but we just kept going. So there's different needs, I think, creatively in a show like that. So being able to help out and kind of be at the forefront has been just so, so great and fulfilling to be able to be involved in bringing this to the fans.
Now, what streamer is this going to be on?
This is on Paramount Plus, which also has all of the episodes of the old show as well.
2007, right? Was that the original air date? Okay. Doing this, do you have this kind of sensation where you want to bounce back into something new, something adult, something, you know, or more adult, let's say? Yeah. Or are you kind of enjoying this moment and kind of want to stick with it? You mentioned creatively. Is this something where you want to be doing this for a while, or you kind of want to put something different in the mix?
It's so hard to say, because, again, I love this show so much, and I love that we're able to keep these characters going. And I think there's a lot of story left, especially with how things are going to change for the characters in the third season. So there's for the fact that it's something that people loved as kids, and I would, like, 9 times out of 10, the reaction for people who have actually seen the new show is that they feel that we've done it justice, that it's mm-hmm. it's the same enough but different enough to keep them engaged. We want to keep that going and keep telling that story for essentially as long as we're welcome, you know, and as long as people keep liking it. So I could see doing this for a long time. And then selfishly, like I said before, it's the best schedule ever if you want to have a family.
Yeah.
So while the kids are young, I can have consistent hours, and I'm not in Vancouver doing night shoots in spandex, you know, as a superhero. And that would be so cool in its own way, but in the real life Nathan Kress phase that I'm in right now with young kids, this is the best balance for a work-life engagement.
iCarly was originally a Nickelodeon show, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And technically, they're still involved at, like, the studio level. So the executives and stuff that we're working with are people that I've known for years and years, including just being a director on other Nickelodeon shows after iCarly ended, where those were people that I interacted with frequently.
What creatively do you want to, if you're looking 5 years down the road, what kind of things would you like to be doing if it's different than this? Like, what kind of film or what?
Yeah.
Doing more directing or maybe writing?
Right. So first off, on the directing side, I've been directing since 2014. So I've done about 20 episodes of TV, including several episodes of the new iCarly. So I definitely want to keep doing that. I love directing multicam. Growing up on it, it's really difficult to learn how to do. You kind of have to just be around it and have experience with it to know how. There's no class. There's no film school you can go to for multicam. So
is that easier or more difficult for you?
It's a lot more difficult because, you know, with single cam, you just know I'm going to get my wides, my tights, my mediums, and maybe a couple crosses. With multicam, it's a dialect. It's like a language, and you're not totally by yourself. You're working with an associate director, a camera coordinator, who will sit down with you and say, okay, so B camera is going to have a single here, but after this actor says this line, it's going to pan over here and get this two shot while X goes to that character because they're going to cross over here. So multi-camera has this hybrid of television and theater where you're staging it on a set with a proscenium where you only have three walls and then the audience is the fourth wall, like a theater set.
Yeah, it sounds like kind of a visual ballet a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. It's very, very intricate because, you know, the audience, If you're one person with one pair of eyes, you can see the whole stage at one time. You're able to watch whatever you want to watch. But you basically have four perspectives that you can take at any given time. But if you have a scene with nine people in it, you can't just put them all together. They're going to be all on different sides of the room. So there is a lot of math that has to be done. And it's a really tough skill to learn. And those guys, those camera coordinators and associate directors, they've been camera operators since the 90s on Home Improvement. And, you know, they're the audience switchers for a live audience show. So they've been doing live edits and they know the language. They know what needs to happen when. So there's various ways into the field. There are pretty few pure actors who transition into multicam directing, but there are several. And I've really, really enjoyed learning from them, you know, because we share kind of similar perspectives as sort of the actor's director. So I definitely want to keep doing that. I'm producing on the show now, too, which has given me a really good look at the nuts and bolts of how a production is done. And being involved in that has been awesome. And that's something that I would want to do on any show that that I act on. But as far as the acting stuff goes, I honestly would love to take a completely different approach. I love comedy. I love multicam. If you could tell me right now, you could be on a multicam show for the rest of your life and everyone would just love it and it would be a ratings smash and no one would ever get tired of it, I wouldn't get tired of it either. I would do it for the rest of my life. But at the same time, and this is also where multicam is nice, you get big long hiatuses usually, and that's where you can go off and do other stuff. So if I could do anything other than this, it would be completely the other direction, like gritty military drama, The Hurt Locker, Saving Private Ryan, you know, a cop Training Day, anything in like the police military vein. I've been so in, that's just been one of my interests since I was a really, really young kid. And portraying that has always been something that I've been really interested in. And there's always just so much story there. And, you know, again, tough with the face that I've had, you know, I would be pretty much relegated to the private storming D-Day who gets, you know, brought down in the first 5 seconds of the movie. Like that was kind of where I feel like I've been sort of locked, but I'm hoping that as I've gotten older and, you know,
you kind of like Star Trek, you'd be in the red shirt. Was that the right ones that always get killed? Yeah.
Yeah. The really young ensign. Yeah. His first day on the Enterprise. Yeah. That would have been me. So I'm hoping, you know, getting into my 30s that I can broaden out and get into more the action, adventure, espionage, intrigue, combat, all that fun stuff would just be really, really cool.
Yeah, stuff blowing up and, you know, that to me would be fun. I think when you're a kid, that stuff sounds fantastic, you know, to be on a set like that. But that even begs the question, what, you know, to hit rewind, even back when you were filming iCarly, the original version, like, what were you into? What were you watching? What was inspiring you? What were you looking at going, that's my groove. That's where I want to see myself. What kind of movies and shows?
Well, kind of a mix. So I had a very small run of acting from like 3 to 6 years old and then lost interest and decided to quit. But when I got back into it at around 11, I homeschooled from 6th to 12th grade. So starting in 6th and all the way through my high school career when I was on set doing iCarly. And when I was homeschooling and when I was actually at home, I would try to finish my school by noon so I could take lunch and watch I Love Lucy on daytime TV. I grew up on that show. I love it, still love it. And I think that was the first show where like my love of multicam really kind of took off. As I got older, it was a lot of like JAG, NCIS, stuff that I was probably, you know, I was not the demographic for it, but I loved crime procedurals, Law and Order, you know? But then on the comedy side, How I Met Your Mother. That was one of my favorite shows. That was my go to the gym. And while I'm on the elliptical, I was plowing through How I Met Your Mother. But then like all the way on Doctor Who, love just like quirky sci-fi and that the Britishness of it all. I was all over the place. There was no one specific vein, and I think that's why there's really not much that I would say no to. As far as like, oh, I don't do sci-fi, I don't do action, I don't do, you know, really human drama, I don't do whatever. I'm up for it all as long as it's a great story, you know, and really just like, I just want to be a part of something that's eternal, you know, in the entertainment world.
Again, going back to the inception, like you got going, was this something that was what you wanted to do, or did somebody see and say, yeah, this kid ought to, let's get him in for an audition. Let's see what, you know, that, you know, how did, what was the genesis where you, when you kicked off your acting career?
Yeah, it was basically that. When I was three, I had no understanding of what acting was. I just watched Mr. Rogers and Barney and VeggieTales and memorized what I was hearing, and I would perform it back for my family on camera with a microphone. And I didn't realize what that was. I just knew I liked it. And, you know, my parents, I'm so forever grateful for how they approached this whole thing, because they never, ever forced me. In fact, they dragged their heels most of the time, because they knew the common trajectory for child actors. You know, they knew that the industry can chew you up and spit you out, and that you can have a real mess on your hands if you don't handle it very gingerly and carefully. So they didn't really want me doing it, but I think enough of their friends and people who just saw me doing my thing, just being a giant ham and talking all the time. And, you know, my mom swears my first word was construction at 9 months old. I don't see how that's true. She swears by it. I was just a chatterbox. And all of their friends were like, you know, you should probably at least give this a try and see if it works out. If he does some stuff as a kid, there's college money, you know, like just see. And so they took me to a cattle call, an ad in the newspaper at a park, and a bazillion kids showed up, and I sat in an agent's lap and sang him a song, and they could just tell I just had no fear. You know, I was just social and was willing to do whatever. And I wasn't going to clam up and be really shy and, you know, just be kind of outward facing at all times. So I got an agent out of that, started auditioning for various stuff. Didn't really do a ton. It was just kind of print work and some voiceover stuff, which was very bizarre to do at 4 years old. I didn't understand it at all. But it was interesting because I got close on some stuff. I know that it was between me and Johnny Lipnicki for Jerry Maguire.
Really?
We were like taking turns, you know, in the room. I don't remember any of it. This is just what my parents told me. But it was funny because the reason why I loved it so much was because I didn't understand the audition process. I thought the audition was the job.
You know, in a very real sense, you know, I coach voiceover and I tell my students the audition is the job. If you get the job, mm-hmm. that's just gravy. You know, you got to look at the audition as the job. So, right. You know, that's that for a kid, that's not knowing everything probably helps you to not be so nervous, you know?
Exactly. My parents did a good job of making sure that I didn't know how the sausage got made, because I don't think, and they were right, because the reason why I got out of acting at that age was because I went to a voiceover audition to do ADR for the Dudley Do-Right movie, Brendan Fraser, and it was a flashback where it was his younger self talking, and he used very intricate words, had a very elaborate vocabulary, and spoke very fast, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't match it. And so in that audition, for the first time ever, they did live cuts and said, these people can go, these people can stay. And it clicked in that moment, I have been rejected. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do as good as other kids did. And for that reason, I've been sent home. And I walked out of the parking lot. I remember this part so clearly, just saying, I'm not having fun anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And it wasn't just that. I was also just missing out on being a kid and playing t-ball and going to school and hanging out with my brothers. But that was just the icing on the cake that finally was the last straw that sent me over was, oh, wait a minute. Part of this is rejection? Because I don't like that at 6 years old. So that kind of shattered the illusion for me a little bit, where I finally understood what an audition was, that it was not the job. So that got me out of it, and I didn't want to get back in until I was 11 and had auditioned for school plays, had to face that rejection, got roles, you know, fair and square, rather than, you know, someone just handing it to me, and being willing to accept the fact that most of this industry is just being told no over and over and over again, and beating your head against that wall and waiting for someone to say yes, which sounds insane that we do that voluntarily, but you have to because you love it so much.
Well, going back to your folks, what kind of work did they do? What kind of work do they do?
So my mom luckily was able to stay home with us, but my dad was a police officer. So yeah, that's probably where a lot of that, the sense of like duty and service and sacrifice came from, because he was just, he did a little bit of everything at his department and was a massively commended officer who never got a single civilian complaint in his entire 35-year career.
Wow. 35 years. So he retired from being a policeman.
Yes. So he retired. He still volunteers because he just can't quit. he loved flying. That was always his favorite assignment. So he works at the heliport.
Very cool.
He does air operations stuff, and he loves it. He'll probably stop eventually because, you know, now he's got grandparent duties and stuff, so that's going to be keeping him busier and busier. But yeah, so that was my life that I, you know, grew up watching that. And I don't know how we would have done it if my mom was working, because I was a full-time job for her, driving me from the boonies of Los Angeles County to Santa Monica every day.
That's, I mean, hats off to them, because, you know, that's, it's not easy for a parent to navigate that. I will say that having coached young children, all, I'm not young children, but some kids who actually were on some Disney Channel shows.
Yeah.
There are some really talented kids and some parents that really support them. Go back, especially this, I forgot the name of the apartment complex. They always go out to
the
LA.
Oakwoods.
Yeah. Well, it's got a different name now, I think. But
I don't remember what it is now, but that's what it was.
Yeah. And that sounds like really fun for a kid, but still for a parent, that's a lot of navigation within a family, a lot of sacrifice. So hats off to them. Before we wrap up, one of the things I like to do is ask my 7 questions. It's just kind of an additional get to know you. Just kind of fun, you know. What is your favorite comfort food? That thing that, end of the day, you're like, God, just give me some of that. I don't care if it's got a lot of bad cholesterol, whatever, or it could be really healthy. It doesn't make a difference. But that thing that makes you feel good and kind of chill.
Yeah. My top comfort food is probably barbecue. It's just perfect. It's sweet, it's savory, it's tangy. You got all the different textures, got the smoky. There's so many different ways you can go with it. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like you're seducing me right now.
I'm sorry. Tangy and smoky. Well, I just had barbecue last night too, so it's still like lingering in my senses. That and whiskey. Not in an excessive way, but that's also the comfort that my wife and I, at the end of the night, after a long day of parenting, we'll sit down to a couple ounces of something brown that burns.
That's our... Now, barbecue-wise, you ever been to Dallas or Austin to have barbecue?
We went to... iCarly and Victorious, the casts, came together for this event that we did for a benefit at St. Jude's. And while we were there, we did a barbecue fest in Memphis. And that was definitely some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life. Like, they just slapped a pig on a table and pulled out what they claimed to be bacon, which I've never seen. It was like stringing apart and odd looking. So I don't know what kind of bacon that was, but that was one of the best things. Ha. See, now I'm seducing myself with it. That was some of the best stuff I have ever had.
Well, if you're having it in Austin, down in Austin, go to Franklin Barbecue. You got to check it out. good okay. stuff.
You know, I've heard of that, actually. They're on some show or something that I've seen, for sure. That sounds
pretty cool. They're on everybody. Everybody stops in there to check it out, without a doubt. So now I'm like, my next thing is lunch. I'm dying over here now. You made the barbecue sound so good. You literally changed what I'm doing for lunch today.
Email me a picture. I want to live vicariously through you.
Now, the next question I got for you, if you're going to sit down and have a cup of coffee, three people, you're just going to talk story. Living or not, who would you like to sit down with and have a cup of coffee for an hour or two?
Oh, man. I love me some historical figures. And especially, like, I think American colonial history is one of the ones that I'm most fascinated by. So George Washington would probably be a pretty safe bet. I think my mom's side of the family is from Mississippi, and so my grandparents, you know, live there, and we would go on cop salary. You can only fly there with a family of five so many times, but we went as often as we could, and I really wish, especially now, that I had a little bit more time to talk with my granddaddy, because he passed away when I was, well, granted, in, you know, my early 20s. So I did get some experiences with him, but I would love to have just, like, sat with him to the extent that I sat with my grandpa that lives here in California. And he just passed away last year. So, but I was able, I felt good about some of the time that I was able to get with him, especially toward the
there's
end.
There's never enough time. That's one of those things that
there are
moments, no joke, that I occasionally have a life experience, something with a kid, and I mean, for a fraction of a second, I'm thinking, I talked to my grandfather about that, and then it's been he's passed away almost 19 years ago, but I was very close with him as well. So but there's never enough time. That's the rough thing when you get a little bit older. You kind of want to go to the folks with more gray hair and say, what do you think about this? Where in Mississippi, by the way, are they from?
Jackson area.
Okay. I'm in New Orleans, right over close to Mississippi.
My father-in-law's side of the family is from the Baton Rouge area, so we go to Louisiana a decent bit, and I miss it already.
There's a lot of filming down here, so find a reason to come down. You can have put on some pounds of some pretty good food.
I did. I've had enough boudin and cracklins to last a lifetime. It's probably for the best that I don't go down there, because I gain absurd amounts of weight. Circling back around, my third person, I got to go with Denis Villeneuve.
Very good.
I have a massive director crush on that man.
I just saw a movie he directed. What did he direct? I watched it with my son the other day. I said, and his name popped up. I was like, wait a minute. He directed Dune. But it may have been, I don't know if it was it? Shit. I'll remember in a moment, but it was something from the early 2000s, late 90s. It was something I was kind of surprised that he did. I was like, wait a minute, I'm seeing his name pop up, but it'll come to me in a moment. But now, next question real quick is, if you're going to be living on an island, actually an island you really like, you want to be there, you're not stranded or anything, but there is no internet. So, if you want to listen to music or if you want to watch a movie, you're going to have to bring a CD or bring a DVD with you. Would that DVD or CD be for that 1 year you're going to be on this island with your family?
For a movie, for sure, The Lord of the Rings. The extended editions, I'll give myself that. For one, just because, that's a lot of hours of content. So you can cycle through that and you wouldn't get as tired of it as you would from maybe an hour and a half animated feature. But those are hands down my favorite movies. My wife and I bonded massively over The Lord of the Rings when we were just starting out in our relationship. Our whole wedding was Lord of the Rings themed. It was ridiculous.
Really? No
kidding. I got a sign right there. People had to walk into the wedding. It's no admittance except on party business. And it was probably a borderline amount of cringe Lord of the Rings for a wedding. But hands down, I will go to my grave saying those are the best movies of all time, and I will fight anybody who disagrees with me. But
yeah, you and Stephen Colbert have a thing for that. But honestly, I think I've seen just one of the movies, and I know, shame on me. And I was talking about Walsh the other day. I said I haven't seen Veep. There are so many great things I haven't seen yet because there's so much out there.
There's a bazillion. Yeah, I don't blame you on that part. There is a dearth, or just like massive, massive crush of content that you can drown under now. So it is hard, but I definitely recommend that one. That is just a absolute classic that will stand the test of time, that visually, even though it was from the 90s and early 2000s, those visuals still hold up today. It was just incredible what they did, even just with the technology back then. And just one of the best stories, truly, of all time, as far as I'm concerned. Just like the depiction of the battle of good and evil is so quintessential in that movie, or set of movies.
But as far as now the music side of things, where would you be?
That's tough. I've really gotten into just non-lyrical, almost atmospheric and environmental type, just like background music. I know the one that especially just when I'm stressed or if we're having a weird family dinner, I'll just say like, let's put on a lo-fi. And we put on a lo-fi and everyone pretty much just calms down. It's got, so lo-fi, like low fidelity. It's basically like a combination of jazz, hip hop with this like desyncopated rhythm with like record crackle overlaid on top of it. And it's just so relaxing and it's a little bit kind of offbeat sometimes. And it just clicks in your brain very differently. And I feel like if we were stuck on an island, I might need to unwind and relax a little bit. And lo-fi does it the best.
Now, over to the next question here. Definition of a perfect day for you. Now, you're going to get up in the morning all the way till you fall asleep. What are the component parts of a perfect day that's on point for you?
I slept in for sure. And somehow my children slept in. So that I woke up like an hour before they did, but also so did my wife. And so we could just like lay there and talk for a good half hour and just hang out and have some completely quiet alone time together, which just sounds like magical and unobtainable now. And then a quality French press coffee in the morning. Some time to just like go off and be quiet, be by myself, do some devotions, have some quiet time. Cause it's weird. I adore my wife and my children, but I'm pretty introverted. I'm a very introverted extrovert, or extroverted introvert. And I've learned about myself that I actually need a little bit more alone time.
You need that recharge time.
Yeah. I just run out of juice, you know, even in a close knit family setting, I've just found like I recharge so much when I just get that little bit of alone time. So probably a little bit of that. And honestly, like, it's as hard as it is and how crazy and chaotic it can be, the rest of that day is just family time. Like I'm so addicted to it right now. And I see how it's paying off with our bond and relationship, the way that these kids are growing up and just getting to imprint the smiles that are on their faces and just try to lock that into my brain. I'm just like soaking it up like a sponge right now. And it's hard to really imagine doing something else. But shortly, part of that family time is taking the girls for a Mustang ride. We have a 1965 Mustang convertible that
really,
both
very
of
nice.
My girls. So it was my wife's grandfather's car. It was her dream car as a kid. And to surprise her, when I was going to propose, my dad and I drove out to Colorado to pick it up and drive it back. So I bought it from him. It was like half bought it, half wedding present. And then worked on fixing it up. And then kind of gave it to her as a engagement gift. So I bribed her into marrying
me. I didn't realize you could make an old car seem so incredibly romantic as you just did. You know,
I bonded with my girls over it. They just love going for rides, having that alone date time, you know, just taking them out for breakfast or something, or even just picking my oldest one up from school. There's something about it that just changes the monotony of the day. And I don't know, we just drive around and listen to Beach Boys. That's like their number one thing. I don't have to say it. We pull out of the driveway and they're like, "Where's the Beach Boys?" So I put together a playlist of timeline correct music for that car, and we just shuffle through it and just pretend like we live in a different era for a little while.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. My 17-year-old daughter, it's like, get in the truck and listen to country music. And that, I mean, that's her thing. She does it like, do we have to go home right now? She just wants to drive around. So, yeah. But we'll tell you what, the last couple questions. Now, if you weren't doing this right now, and this was not your vocation, yeah, what would be the thing that you did for a living that would bring you satisfaction?
For a while, I thought that it was going to be some kind of like police, military, public service thing. I got kind of sidelined from that. I had a lot of back pain in my like late teens, early 20s. Found out that I had a birth defect in my spinal cord that I corrected, but then the surgery from it kind of messed me up more than the pain that I was in before. So I knew that I'd pretty much wash out of anything, you know, that was in that vein, because I just wouldn't be able to physically hack it. But over time, I think what I've found is in life and in my experiences, I'm a salesman, I think, in like some quadrant of my mind. So doing something in like real estate or sales where it's forward facing and interfacing with small groups of people and establishing rapport and relationship and just being human with them, but also providing a service and encouraging them by being excited about whatever it is that I'm excited about. Because once I go all in on something, I'm so in and I'm so excited about it that like when I go to a car dealership and I'm talking about a car to my wife and talking about all the things about the car, the sales guy goes, "Let me give you my card. If you ever want to like start selling cars, let me know." Or like when we were looking for a house, or I would show a friend around a house, the agent representing the house would be like, "So you're their agent, right?" And I'd be like, "No, I just know how to get a person excited about it, I guess."
But no, hey, that's like, you know, what you're talking about sounds like a really good producer, you know, excited about your project, your pitch, you know.
That's true.
Now, real quick, last question. If you had a DeLorean, you could pop back, let's rewind back to when you're 16.
Yeah.
And you've got a couple minutes to convey a piece of advice, either in the moment to make that time in your life better, or put you on a track to kind of better track, whatever. What would that piece of advice be to 16-year-old you?
This sounds awful, but I don't know if I would tell myself anything. I'm really genuinely happy with how my life turned out. Like I think that's not to say we haven't faced a lot of adversity, especially since, you know, becoming married, and a lot of just like physical challenges and just stuff. We're just like incredibly unlucky people, to the point that now we are able to laugh about it, because it's not like, oh, I wonder if something bad is going to happen. It's oh, I wonder what it's going to be this time. Like, that's just sort of how we operate, and we've just become so jaded by it. So it's not that it's just been this like super glitzy life. It's just, I've learned a lot from those things. And I think as a team, my wife and my family, we've come out better because of it. And all of the things, I see how my path and the decisions that I made and that my parents helped me to make, especially in my young life, all of it's contributed to this. And I'm so thrilled with it, you know? I guess if anything, I would just say like, I would have saved myself probably from a phase of being really uncomfortable with my body right after I moved out of my house. I just didn't know anything about like taking care of myself, or like cooking healthy meals, or having like a regular exercise schedule. So I probably would just say like, start cooking sooner. because I could have saved myself a lot of agony.
I wish I'd done the same thing, actually. I'm big into cooking now, and my kids have grown up cooking.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I've heard, by the way. If you cook with your kids, especially shop with your kids,
yeah,
they tend to be healthier.
Yes. Yeah, that's something that, like, I talk with my kids about macronutrients. You know, when we're having breakfast, like, okay, there's your protein, there's your fat. Let's find a good, healthy carb for you, you know, and like just teach them that food is a science, you know, it's a math equation. You got to have balance in what you're doing, what you're eating. And I did not have that. I had to learn that the hard way. I literally lost out on a role. Probably shouldn't say which one, but it would have been a really fun one where it was down to me and two other guys. And they said, so acting wise, he was the best, but he's just not physically what we're looking for. And what that was that I was 30 pounds heavier than I should have been for my height and BMI. And the other guys did not look that way. So I definitely lost out because I wasn't taking care of myself. And that was a big, that snapped something for me. And that was what kind of kicked me off on starting to take better care of myself. So if I would have done that sooner, I probably would have dealt with a little bit less anguish.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, hey, before we go, Rick, you do have a podcast, correct?
I do. Yeah, it's funny. It's called Radioactive Dads. I do it with my buddy Brett Davern, who's another fellow young actor friend who's got young kids. We've been doing it since 2019. We've actually been kind of on an accidental hiatus where he does so many other podcasts for like local Seattle sports teams. He's a big sports guy. And he's been so busy with that. And I've been so busy at home and with some other work stuff that's been going on in the background that we just haven't been able to do it in the last little bit. I expect that we'll be able to come back at some point. But for now, there's 3 years of episodes that people can catch up on in the meantime. We were there weekly on Adobe Radio, and we just kind of we cover a lot of parenting stuff, but it's mostly just sort of catharsis to each other and therapy about what we're dealing with.
It's kind of cool to commiserate, if you will, with other parents about the good, about the things that are rough, but the things that are really good. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a dumpster out there, but no, man, I so appreciate your time. By the way, my apologies.
You got that. I got the lawnmower this whole time, so.
By the way, the movie I was thinking of, Villeneuve, is that how you say his name? Mm-hmm. Is Sicario. That's what I was watching the other day.
Yep.
But my friend, have a great rest of your day, and hopefully we'll catch up down the line, my friend.
All right, Mark. Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
All right, there you go, Mr. Nathan Kress. Really enjoyed that chat. Intriguing guy. He's had a long career, started young in the industry, and came back to where he was probably most well-known. That's, of course, iCarly, which is right now on Paramount Plus. That's it for me for today. Please, if you would, don't forget to subscribe and like this show, no matter what podcast platform or YouTube or wherever you're checking out the show. Definitely want you to come back by, get notified every time there is a new episode, so like, follow, do all that kind of stuff. Okay, that's it for me. I'm out of here. You have yourself a great, safe, awesome whatever you got planned for the rest of your day or evening. I hope you are safe, have a great time, and I will talk to you next time right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.